Hello, hello, everybody. It is Jackie Jing and James Beckett. I pointed the wrong way. You're over here. And welcome to the Anime News Network After Show podcast. And we're going to be talking about Made in the Abyss, a ton of headlines, and really excited to chat about the Dragon Ball Super Superhero movie, which we both got screeners to. I got to go to the red carpet, which was super fun, and it was snazzy.
Did you get to meet Piccolo?
It's so funny. Lindsay is obviously out. She's not here with us today. She's on a little vacation, which is well deserved because she and I have been like hitting up so many cons and she's always like running around like a mad woman and doing a great job. So hope she's enjoying her vacation. But she literally I didn't expect to hear from her all week. And then she saw the photo that I took on the red carpet of Piccolo. I kind of want to read what she was sending me. Let me see if I can find it. But she was cracking me up.
I honestly didn't know if that was like a real picture Piccolo, at first. Like I kind of
Piccolo
thought.
Piccolo does his taxes. Piccolo has to break up another fight at the bar. Middle management Piccolo.
I would watch a movie about middle management Piccolo, to be honest. Like I would.
But it was like.
We need
Piccolo
that.
And then. Awful suit. I'm sorry. I don't know who was cosplaying. I don't want to be mean, but like definitely. Yeah. So that was definitely one of the highlights without a doubt. And then it was great just to see all the stars. And to be honest, like it's just always wild to me how far we've come with anime that there are red carpets in LA with celebrities like Jay Pharoah from SNL showed up. And there was like all these basketball players and WWE wrestlers and stuff. Like, it's just like crazy to me, James.
I know my like 10-year-old self that played Dragon Ball Z in the playground at recess would be so vindicated right now. That,
I know.
All those dumb bullies that told me that I was going to be a weird nerd about cartoons for my whole life. I mean, they were right, but it's no longer as weird. It's just kind of weird instead of
yeah
weird. So we won.
I agree. Actually, it was funny. I hosted the Jujutsu Kaisen panel for Crunchyroll Expo, and at the end they were like, Jackie, thank you so much, you know. And I was like, I don't even know what 12-year-old Jackie would be thinking right now, because I literally was bullied and I literally ate lunch in the bathroom by myself, like in a bathroom stall. Like you see that on TV and it's like, I literally had to do that. Cause like I had nowhere to go and I was so embarrassed and didn't want to like sit by myself in the lunchroom, you know? And it was because I had Sailor Moon like stickers inside my locker, which I thought was super cool. You know what I mean? Like to me, it was like the best thing ever, you know, yeah. But yeah.
Well, now people are like driving. I don't know if they have them out in California, but yeah, here in Colorado, we got plenty of proud weeb trash that they get.
Those, oh, really?
There's car decals where like the entire car is just covered in like anime.
Do you guys really?
Characters. Yeah.
We definitely don't have that in LA. I mean, I kind of would, but like, I'm just like, you know, okay, maybe.
There's one car that lives near me, especially. I gotta say, they're a little shameless because let's just say that the amount of cleavage just all over that car is more than you would expect. Really, for any vehicle.
Goodness.
Or whatever, right?
I'm not going to lie. Again, my car in high school, I put some of the Sailor Moon like photos up there. You know what I mean? Or like stickers on the back. I was like...
No, I'm talking... Yeah, I'm talking like anime girl the size of the car door. Like,
oh, you know what? When I was at Crunchyroll Expo, they had cars that were like decked out like that.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. Here we go, you know. Anyway, so I guess talk to me about the movie. What were your thoughts? Spoiler free, everybody. Don't worry. Spoiler free. Spoiler free. We're not gonna, you know, do anything or say anything that you know is inappropriate. So
yeah. So not getting into any spoilers. I thought the movie was really good for the most part. There was some stuff that we might have a more spoiler-filled discussion later on that you guys can catch up on to hear about some of the stuff that maybe wasn't quite as smooth, but I thought it was really funny. I was really surprised at like how much I was laughing for most of the movie, especially because Dragon Ball humor can be kind of hit and miss. I thought a lot of the humor in this movie actually really worked. And I really liked, I was really pleasantly surprised by the CGI. This is the first, I believe it's the first ever Dragon Ball movie to be 100% 3D animation. And obviously, being anime fans that have had to watch a lot of shows over the past few years, we've seen that the computer, even the feature films, the computer generation can be great sometimes and not so great sometimes. And this really, and the best parts felt, it kind of felt like, it felt like you had just jumped into the 2D Dragon Ball world, but you just happened to get a more
three-dimensional look at it.
No, I didn't.
Chris put it up. Oh my gosh. Yeah, this is, by the way, not for Piccolo from the movie. I feel like this would deter a lot of people from wanting to see the movie.
Yeah, no, the Piccolo in the movie looks wonderful. Jackie, have you been watching that show, The Rehearsal, with Nathan Fielder?
No.
This guy makes me think of Nathan from Nathan For You, like that he somehow or another got roped into doing some kind of cosplay business. Okay, I think
the worst part of the cosplay is that his hair is sticking out the back and it looks like he's balding Piccolo, though we know Piccolo's already bald, but it's just like almost like, what is happening here? Like, I don't know. To be honest, the face paint's exceptional. It's just like the suit. Like, I just wish he would have, if he came in like the Piccolo outfit, you know, with the shoulder pads and everything, like that would have been great for the carpet, but it's the fact that he's in a suit.
I've been playing a lot of the Yakuza games recently, and this guy straight up looks like one of the strange people that would come fight you on the street in the middle of like an especially goofy Yakuza side story.
Oh, like, man.
You could have, if you told me that got ripped straight out of a Yakuza game and photoshopped in there, I'd probably believe you.
Yeah.
That's not even a criticism. I love Yakuza. I'm just saying.
No, dude, Yakuza, that, like, I've never played them, but like just the amazing things I've heard about those games, just like how funny they are, because the translations were really funky in the back in the day, right? So they would like translate it and they would be saying like absurd stuff, but like it just looks so fun. But okay, so overall, you really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would say I haven't really kept up with the Super show, but of the Super movies that I've watched, like, does Resurrection F count as Super? Or is that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's actually the like first movie.
It's like the first arc, right?
Yeah, like it's the first Dragon Ball Super movie. Because so you know how they're all Dragon Ball Super : you know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, you keep on talking.
No, I was just saying, of those ones, Super, the one with Beerus, the Battle of Gods.
I'm wrong. It's Dragon Ball Z : Resurrection F.
Okay, that I thought the transition from Z to Super was a little weird, but
yeah, I think that that kind of covers the transition. But I thought that it was Dragon Ball. Anyway, sorry, I messed up. But yeah,
no, yeah, it's a little confusing. But point being, of the recent movies I've seen, I think it's definitely my favorite.
Really?
If only because the animation I thought was really, really good for the most part.
Okay, so Charles said Battle of the Gods and Resurrection F are the first two Super movies. They make the first... Yeah, but the movie said Dragon Ball Z. So, yeah, Candid said they're both Z. I'm not sure, y'all. I know it's kind of like in the transition to Super. Like, so we can, I think, all agree on that. But so for me, I definitely liked Broly better. I think Dragon Ball Super Broly is like one of the best, not just anime movies. I think it's like just one of my favorite things to watch because I absolutely loved, you know, there being like this like other Saiyan out there, right? Because we always hear about like Vegeta and Goku, obviously. And then like Broly comes out of nowhere. And then in the past movies, they made Broly just kind of like, for lack of a better word, a himbo meathead, which he still kind of is. But now his like, he's not just screaming the whole time. Like there's reasons to why he's unbridled. Right. So like, I just loved the backstory with Broly. For this one, I just didn't feel as much heart as I did with Broly. I felt like Broly had a lot of touching moments. This one was definitely more comedic. And I think that the biggest part of this movie is that like Gohan and Piccolo are back, right? And like they're like, this is their movie, which is super cool. I think like no matter what, this movie will be Piccolo and Gohan's movie, which is just super cool. But I think that I think I like Broly better, but I still think this is a really good time. And honestly, if you're a Dragon Ball fan, you need to experience Dragon Ball movies in the theater. Like, there's no reason for you to like wait till this comes out on streaming, because it's all about the action. It's all about the fight scenes. It's all about being in an anime theater and everyone getting like hyped up together and having a great time. Right. And so, yeah, I think that it was really strong. I really liked the new characters a ton. And I really, yeah. It was really nice to see Gohan and Piccolo again. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about the new characters, are we, James? I forgot.
I think there's some, I think we can talk about some of the new characters. I think there's some other details regarding some developments in the last kind of quarter of the movie.
Okay. I remember about what you said now.
But
okay.
I think we can talk about Gamma.
Yeah, I think we can talk about Gamma 1.
They were the best part of, they ruled. I loved them.
Yeah. And without like spoiling anything, I agree with you. Like, I was kind of interested in like what they were going to bring to the table. Right. Cause I was like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, who are they? Like, what's the deal? And they're really, really charming and have a really great story. So I definitely enjoyed them. And then I think what I really enjoyed too, like I said, was like, Gohan's like back in a sense, right? Because like we've just seen, you don't really know Super, but like a lot of people have been like, what happened to Gohan? Because like, you know, he had such a profound impact and you know, was easily the best part of the ending of the Cell Saga, and then just kind of has been like a dad, you know.
I know one of my, I want to say a couple years ago we wrote about like, I think we did an article. I want to say it was like on biggest anime disappointments or biggest anime regrets. I can't remember the exact subject, but I remember what I wrote about was, it was the Buu saga for me was a huge letdown at the time. I've come to appreciate it more as an adult.
Oh my God. Thank God.
When I was a kid, I was super mad about the Buu saga because my boy Gohan, I mean, that one-arm Kamehameha he did against Cell at the end of the Cell arc was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life as a 9-year-old. I became a man when I saw that. Or I felt like I did. So I was always really bummed that he took a huge backseat in the Boo arc. So I was really excited that he actually got some time to shine.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Charles just said that Gohan was supposed to be the new protagonist after Goku died, but the editors of Shonen Jump forced Toriyama to bring Goku back because he was so popular. And I think I've heard that before. But I think that's what makes this movie even more special is that, like, it's Gohan. You know what I mean? It's like Gohan. It's Piccolo's story, I think, more than anything.
I was going to say, Piccolo, I think, he's
the star for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's also just nice because we see like Gohan come back too. Honestly, there's a lot of classic characters. We see Krillin, and I'm like really excited what they did with his character. Bulma's obviously back, and she's just the baddie that she always is. And then Pan had, I thought, a really good arc. Yeah, so like it's a lot of like characters that I don't know. I just like was just like so happy to see them again, you know. So I think
I thought Pan was really cute. Especially because I haven't seen Pan since GT, which I know people don't like to talk about, but I'm most familiar with Pan.
No, people really disliked Pan from GT, from what I've gathered. I never watched GT.
I watched it at the time. I liked it at the time, but obviously it's not anywhere near as good as like the heights of the Android saga or the Cell saga or the Frieza saga. But I think, and granted, I haven't actually sat down to watch GT in like 15 years, so...
Yeah.
Don't quote me.
So on this, but... are you a Cell Saga person? Is that your favorite?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, see, 100%. I love Frieza. I love the Frieza saga. Like Frieza's I love good. The Ginyu Force. Yeah. I love Zarbon. I think Zarbon, I love Raditz. I love Nappa. Like I just felt like there was so like, they're different, right? They're very different. Like Cell is the main baddie and he's so bad, right? Like through all the Cell saga and just so evil. Like I think he is like a really great villain, but like the Frieza saga just has so many iconic like side characters that like for me I love it. And then I just think Frieza is just such a great villain. Like Frieza is just like, oh man. I lean a little bit more towards like I appreciate Cell saga, but I think Frieza is definitely my favorite. But I always like love when people say Cell. Rarely do I hear people say Boo. And I agree with you. I'm not the biggest fan of the Boo saga. I do think it got interesting towards the end, but like all of the Boo eating candy stuff, like I was just like,
yeah. And I might catch some flack for this, but I've never liked Goten. And I know.
Really? My friend's obsessed with Trunks and Goten. Why? Why don't you like Goten? Why?
I don't like, I think, and again, a lot of this kind of comes back to the nostalgia factor, but by the time the Buu saga was sort of reaching like the there was a lot of Gotenks, a lot of Super Saiyan 3 Goku. Not only was I bitter that Gohan was done so dirty during the Buu saga, but I found Goten to be really bland. Like the thing I love about Gohan is that he's so different from Goku, right? He's such a, you know, he's the, I guess you could say like the human part of him, I feel like, is a lot more present. Like he feels a lot more vulnerable than Goku.
Yes, definitely.
And obviously, in one of the big things in Super is that, you know, he's much more focused on things like academics, right?
Yeah.
And I always liked that. I like that he could be the cool nerdy kid that, you know, gets his homework done, but also can kill Cell. And to me, Goten just felt like Kid Goku all over again, just from like back in the early Dragon Ball days. And knowledge. I don't know, it just never worked for me, but I mean, he's charming. So I get it. I get the appeal.
Yeah. I think I like Goten more for his relationship with Trunks. You know what I mean? Like that they're kind of like a duo. Like, I think it's not really like, I never even think of like Goten singularly. Like I just, I'm like, oh, that, you know, like
that's true.
The two little ones just acting a fool, you know? Yes. And Trunks is also a fantabulous character, but okay, we could talk about just the epicness of Dragon Ball forever. But so yeah, I definitely would say that it's one of the better Dragon Ball movies. I thought it was a really good time. I personally liked Broly better, but I think that it's like you have to go see it in theaters. I would by no means be like, wait till it comes out on streaming, like go see this in theaters. Like it's an anime movie. And also I forgot to touch on this, but James, I do agree with you. Considering that the whole thing's CG, I thought that it looked great. You'd watched it at home, obviously. Sorry, you weren't.
I did, and unfortunately, just for technological reasons, I had to watch it on a relatively tiny screen, and so I really wish I could have seen some of those bigger moments on the big screen, because they really take advantage of the CG. Like the camera's always moving. And not in like a bad handshaker's way, but in like, it feels very dynamic.
No, the movement was very cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I honestly thought it was really fun. I don't want to spoil anything, but some of the fight scenes are just really, really, really badass. I don't know how else to say it. So, anyway, yeah, I think I would definitely tell people to go see it. And I thought it was fun. What were final thoughts on it? Like if you can give a little summary.
I would say if you like, what's the name of the fighting game? Dragon Ball Xenoverse. If you've ever wanted to see like some of the sillier, goofier, crazier moments from Dragon Ball Xenoverse, but with like a much higher budget and with more focus on the original characters, then I think you'll get a really big kick out of this. I agree with Jackie. It's not going to. I don't think anyone is going to walk away from it saying that it has like the deepest story or the most intense character development of any of these Dragon Ball arcs and movies. But I think when it comes to sheer, just fun, goofy comic book spectacle, I'd say it's pretty top tier Dragon Ball.
Yeah, no, it was a good time for sure. I think it's like, you always get, I don't know, anime movies tend to always be like fun, you know what I mean? But then you're just like, with Dragon Ball, I just think like, I don't know. I just put a lot of pressure on these movies. I'll be honest. Like I want them to be really, really good. Cause it brings me back to my youth. So I think that it definitely did that and it was a good time, but, now let's move on to headlines. And James, you got a couple of them. So if you want to do little summaries.
I do. I don't think I have the screen share, right now, but I can post the links in the chat for anyone that wants to follow along. But the first story that I thought was pretty interesting, it felt kind of like a blast in the past, to be honest. Oh no, can I not post in the regular chat?
You're not allowed. I don't know.
Oh no. Well, it's on the front page of Anime News Network if you want to visit animenewsnetwork.com for all of your anime news. One of the big stories that came out this week was the Psycho Pass is getting another film. It's celebrating its 10th anniversary, which is a little ridiculous because I remember watching that show in college, the first season, the one that everyone loves. And the fact that it's hitting its 10-year is just a little absurd.
Yeah, I wonder why it's taken that long.
Yeah, well, it's so funny because I know now, Jackie, did you watch Psycho-Pass at all? Have you kept up with that franchise?
I've watched a little bit of the beginning. Remind me of the, I hope I'm thinking of the right anime, but it's something where like dark post-apocalyptic and like people would like go crazy, right? Or something like that. And like they check their passes, like they would like lose it or something like that. Am I making it up? Okay, no, I was like, so, you looked like I was talking nonsense. And I was like, maybe I'm thinking of the completely wrong anime. But...
No. I think so. It is kind of like, sort of like a dystopian future. And the idea is that like, it's basically they have this system in place that sort of determines whether or not someone is going to be like a criminal or going to be at risk for committing, you know, acts of violence or whatever based off of their like psychological profile, right? Mm-hmm. So, it reminded me a lot of like Minority Report almost, and the idea that there's like this algorithmic system that has this hold over society and this hold over, you know, which people are being targeted by law enforcement or not. Mm-hmm. And it kind of asks some of the interesting questions about like nature versus nurture and about, you know, how much of, you know, a criminal's, I guess, actions are sort of rooted in like the system that they're a part of, or how much of it is like their own personal choice. So Gen Urobuchi wrote it.
Then it's got to be great.
Yeah. So wrote Madoka and a really excellent season of Kamen Rider, among other things.
Oh my gosh! But I know that I can't think of the name right now. Thunderbolt Fantasy.
Yes, and Thunderbolt Fantasy puppets.
So amazing. I know. I'm like, oh my gosh, Thunderbolt Fantasy. I've only watched like a few episodes, but I've always been like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Also, James, do you want to add screen to the stream right now or no? Because we can do that.
Oh, we can?
Well, no, like in our private chat, like Chris in the back can throw it up. So just if you want to throw up anything on the screen, just let him know in the chat.
Yeah, here, let me see if I can share this.
Because I'm looking at the article right now and it's pretty cool. They have like a new poster. And I'm pretty sure these are the same characters, right? Like, I feel like I remember the girl in the middle. So,
yeah. And it's kind of shown like how they've all evolved and changed over the years. So I don't know if you guys can see that. Yeah. So it's shown how evolved.
Huge!
And,
oh, you're right. It's shown how they've grown up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Aww,
and regards to, and I will admit I haven't. I heard so many terrible things about season two that I kind of fell off of the. I kind of fell off of the series. So
I hate when that happens. Like Tokyo Ghoul, amazing season one, right? And then I don't even know what the hell was going on. I don't know if it was quite season two, but they had like a new arc and it was like not right. And then Promised Neverland. So it happens sometimes. It's unfortunate.
Promised Neverland never got a second season. I don't know
why. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Stop. That's exactly it. So we'll just pretend that's the same. But yeah, this is one that I've always been like, Jackie, like you need to watch this. It's on the anime watch list, which now has 3 bazillion titles on there. But yeah, someday I'll get to it. But yeah, okay, so that's super exciting. What's our second headline?
And the second headline is that we have a new Studio Trigger project. Although this one is not the cyberpunk. The cyberpunk adaptation, but Delicious in Dungeon is getting an adaptation by Trigger. We don't really know much other than that, other than the fact that I think it looks like Studio Trigger produced. They produced a commercial back in 2019, so they've been linked to the project before to advertise the manga, but all we really have is this kind of key art poster right here with the descending staircase and the creepy critters. And it has been a hot minute since I read the first couple volumes of Delicious in Dungeon. It has been a while. Yeah, I remember really liking it.
I'm trying to find the article so I can take a closer look, but it's interesting. When I think of Trigger, I usually think of post-apocalyptic world, right? Because I think of like Kill la Kill and Gurren Lagann and oh my gosh, Promare. I was like, why can't I think of the last one, you know?
Yeah.
And so this definitely, just from what I've seen, it looks like a much different direction, but I'm intrigued, right?
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to have like Little Witch Academia vibes, kind of more... Yeah. Cozy, heartwarming.
That's true. Yeah. Yes. Definitely Little Witch Academia vibes for sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I guess like just as of late, I always think of them with post-apocalyptic, but you're right. Little Witch Academia. So maybe it'll be just like cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
really well animated anime food, which is always nice to see.
Yeah. I mean, they just kill it. Like I can't, like whenever, actually, you know, what's interesting, people are always asking me for anime recommendations and I should probably just tell them Studio Trigger. Like I should just tell them actually Promare. Like that's a great one. Cause you know, like
Promare, yeah.
You don't have to commit to a season.
Promare
would
be great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was like, Promare is actually a really good recommendation. I'm gonna remember that. I'm gonna be like, Jackie, just from now on, just be like that.
Even Gurren Lagann, I think, is a fairly solid, like, you know, it's so a little good, weird, but I think it's the kind of weird that even non-anime fans can get.
Yeah.
Kill la Kill would probably be the one where it's like you might need to watch a few shows before you jump into Kill
la
Kill.
Oh my god, I love Kill la Kill. I love
it. I do too. I do too.
So much. It's so great. It was nice to see that people are still cosplaying it after all these years. It's getting kind of old. So
I know that one's also. I mean, gosh, that was that 2014 or was that earlier than that?
I thought it was earlier than that. Let me see. Kill la Kill.
Oh man.
Gosh, I want to watch
it. Is it right also now. A decade old? Because that's just
2013,
really good
actually. You're pretty close. It's close to a decade old, but I mean, you were close. 2014, like, I mean, that's bait, yeah. But amazing. I love Satsuki. I think she's like just the greatest, one of the greatest anime characters of all time. I just like so frightening and then such a baddie. Anyway, we digress. So yeah, those are our headlines. Also, like, really, I know that you were suggesting to talk about this too, James, but Skate's getting a second season, Skate the Infinity.
Yeah.
Which I didn't watch it, but I know Lindsay was a fan. I don't know if you watched it.
I watched a good amount of it. I don't know if I finished the first season. Everything just gets so busy right around when the season's wrapping up. But it is good, and yeah. I think you'd really dig it. It's nowhere near as goofy as Birdie Wing. So I mean, it is goofy. Like, I'm not going to try to tell you that it's not a ridiculous show, but I would say it's a bit more grounded and a bit less campy than Birdie Wing. I think you dig it.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe, again, adding to the watch list. I recently started watching Hunter x Hunter.
Oh,
that was a blind spot for me. And it's been slow for me, to be honest. I'm in episode 12 and I'm kind of like... But you know what caught my attention, because I had it rolling in the background, was Killua ripping out that dude's heart. And then I was like, what just happened? I don't know if you remember that part, but I've been like, okay, like they're introducing all the new characters and they're like battling their way. And like Hasoka is obviously scary, but it's like, you know, I'm just like, you know, like it's cool, but it's just like nothing's been like, oh my god, I'm so into this now and I want to see what happens, you know. But when Killua ripped that dude's heart out, I was like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm still giving it a chance, because we're 11 episodes in and I'm not like in love with it yet, but so I'm still gonna give it a chance because it's kind of just like a legendary one. But yeah, so
no, I know how you feel. I want to say we got at least 12 episodes in. We watched quite a bit of it for the anime club that I run with my school. We watched like a decent amount of the first, gosh, at least 12, if not like maybe almost 20 episodes. And I might lose a little bit of my anime cred, but I also kind of had a hard time getting into it.
Yeah.
So
people love Hunter x Hunter though. That's why I'm like, I have to, like, they're obsessed with Ahsoka. I mean, obviously Gon is like, everyone just says he's like best boy. And I think a lot of people like Killua too, but I've just like, Leorio is funny, but I'm just like, it's just like, I haven't like, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. Maybe it'll get better later. At first, like 30 episodes of Hunter x Hunter are kind of slow, but the following arcs are incredible. So maybe we have to give it a little more. Okay. We'll see. It's my bad.
Because right after I fell off of Hunter x Hunter is when I started watching Gintama. And that show really worked for me.
Really? Okay, so maybe I need to watch Gintama. I never finished Black Clover either.
Oh, I couldn't even. I was one of those guys where his voice was just too much for me.
You were just like, I'm not about it.
I couldn't.
I mean, yeah, I hate to say it. It was kind of just a copy of Naruto, and they just made them like a little bit more fantasy. You know what I mean? And so I was just.
It has a lot of fans. I've seen a lot of my mutuals on Twitter will sing its praises. So I have no doubt that it's really found its stride. But
yeah, someone said Yu Yu Hakusho. That's classic. I've seen Yu Yu Hakusho. We watched that back in the day on.
I want an HD remake of Yu Yu Hakusho so bad.
Yeah, I want it to be remade too. I think that they could animation wise, like really. I mean, that Yu Yu Hakusho is old. What is that? 1990. It's early.
Like, I mean, that has to be early or late. I'll look it up. That's a power.
Yeah, I was like, someone Google it. We'll just Google it.
But I mean, I watched it on Toonami, but I have no idea.
I watched it on Adult Swim, I'm pretty sure.
1992, the year of my birth.
92? I was going to guess 94.
Nah, 30 Wild. Years old.
That is.
Well, 30 in October. It'll be 30 in October.
Wow. Okay.
Well, happy birthday.
That's wild. Aw, I wrote that down actually because I work on the social team here and I'm like, I better not forget that. But anyway, let's start talking about Made in the Abyss. Definitely not one of the saddest episodes we've seen, but I would say intensity wise, it really picked up. Like this was like pretty like, whoa, what the hell is going on? At least in my opinion.
I was going to ask you, did you, because I know that this season, you were feeling a little rocky with it just because of how dour and depressing.
This episode, I thought, was a lot more action, and I thought less perverted stuff and stuff that made me cringe happening.
We still got a little, but it wasn't anywhere near as bad.
Yeah, I mean, there was pretty gory. Like one of the hollows got like compute. Oh my gosh, it was like the shopkeeper hollow. He like, you know, the jelly thing got him, and then he was just like his skin was melting, and I was like,
oh yeah. When it was like the kaiju fight, like the hollow.
Yeah, that was fun. But I was just like, but anyway, yeah. I want us to do a synopsis really quick. So James, do you just want to like say briefly like what happened during the episode to everybody?
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, this is maybe one of the most straightforward episodes.
Do you want to share your screen too?
I have the it's kind of straightforward because we get a quick recap where we're reminded that Riko has to decide whether or not she wants to trade her eyes, her legs, or half of her organs in order to rescue Midi and Nanachi. But before she can make that decision, our boy Majikaya kind of rescues Riko and takes her out of that bad situation.
Really quickly, like, I was kind of surprised he did that because I find the hollows to be... I guess I'm not surprised, but I think like with Kaya, is it Kaya or Kaja?
Maybe Kaja. I looked it up and I think it's Kaya.
Okay. So with Kaya, I've just found Kaya to be very robotic and not care a lot about humans or care about anyone. You know what I mean? Like he just like his delivery is just like, and now he will be ripped to shreds because he disobeyed. You know what I mean? It's like, I just never feel empathy. So when Kaya was like, don't do that, like I was like, it kind of like took me back, like, you know, I don't know if you felt that way or not, but I was like, oh okay, Kaya's like, well, protecting.
Yeah, I think it, and something, and they bring it up actually later on in the episode where Mugi even talks about how, you know, compared to Riko, the hollows are not really, they don't really operate out of selflessness, right?
Yeah,
we've seen this whole season that they're literally kind of defined by their own pleasure and their own desire. Like their whole bodies have been, you know, shaped to accommodate whatever they want the most. And so I think a lot of this season, it's been a little hard to read Kaya, and not just because he's a fart cloud in a robot body, but also because he, you know, he's talked about Riku a lot in regards to like how valuable she is. And so it's hard to know like how much is he helping them because of, you know, how valuable the kids are versus, you know, out of any genuine like goodness or friendship. And yeah. I think this scene, he does still mention like this sort of that Riku's kind of tossing away her value by giving in to Bailoff's deal, but he does still help them. Like he kind of spirits her away and keeps her from sacrificing those things. And so I think I don't know if there's, I mean, we've also seen that like Ma was willing to sacrifice themselves to rescue Mania and Riku. So I think we're supposed to start seeing that there are, you know, there is, you know, community and there is goodness in these creatures. It's maybe just a little buried underneath all of like the kind of perverted weird desires that motivate a lot of them.
Like maybe there's just a little bit of human. I think it just shocked me because he seems so inhuman. Like he just seems so literally like a fart cloud in a puppet. Like I don't know how else to say it. You know what I mean? So I was like, because like the pink one that we see later, not Ma, the one that can speak you know, human tongue, is actually seems pretty compassionate and aware of, you know what I mean, like I don't know, just seems more conscious, I guess, more, I don't know, maybe I'm making that up, but like for me, I was like, when I saw Kaya did that, I was shocked. But here, I didn't mean to interrupt. It just sometimes I get excited. So, but yeah, keep on
going. No, I think it's one of the bigger moments of the episode because that kind of, because Kaya rescues Riku, Riku and Voico and everyone in the village basically encounter the luring, which is where, because none of the villagers can leave the village, they're all like, they literally are bound there in order to, and it was kind of unclear or maybe ambiguous as to whether they were doing this for food or whether they were doing it for kind of for like money to like increase their value by helping kill a big creature. They lure these outside forces into the village to fight them. And that's sort of how they keep their village running and keep it prosperous. And the creature that they lured in this time, we learn at the very end of the episode, it's like a mass of tiny little worms that are all attached to like this queen hive structure. And like you said earlier, and I think I might have even gotten a picture of it, it melts faces. It's not good.
Yeah, I was like, I was honestly like, I mean, it's made in the abyss. We see very, very messed up things happen, you know, but I was like, this is pretty intense, especially because the shopkeeper was so nice and turned Prushka into something like really remarkable, which I'm sure you'll talk about too. But
yeah, we Prushka has kind of evolved as a white whistle. The shopkeeper was able to unlock the potential, I guess, of Prushka's white whistle form. So now she's actually like a proper whistle instrument that can be used, which becomes really important later. We got that weird moment where the little stonecrafter guy admitted that one of the reasons he did it was because it literally like made him climax, which was kind of an unnecessary detail.
I missed that.
The subtitle, yeah, it might have been the subtitles are like being laid on top of the Holo language or the Japanese hiragana katakana subtitles, but he says that like working on the whistle made me feel so good, it made me climax, and it's like, okay, thank you, we didn't need to know that, but okay, thank you.
It's just made either way this.
I know, yeah, either way, even if you did it for selfish reasons, it still helped our girl Riku out because she came up with a whole crazy plan to take down this monster because Jiraimo, the nasty looking third sage that took over Voico's spot, couldn't do it with his giant phallic sword. And so instead, Riku has to cut her hair and Kaya gets like a cool kind of
upgrade. He's a Super like, Saiyan.
Yeah, he gets like a power up, which is pretty nice. He gets like his battle suit. And then that's not quite enough to take down the monster though. And so because of the shopkeeper's weird fetishistic whistle work, Riko is able to summon Prishka's, or use Prishka's kind of magical whistle properties to summon Reg. And he also gets kind of a power up. It was like a, almost like a palette swap in a fighting game where his skin got darker and his helmet got turned white. And that's actually what allowed them to destroy the monster and kind of save the day.
Yeah, it was interesting because later he just went back to his original form. It just like kind of like faded. But anyway, I think, yeah, that's pretty much the synopsis there. I have a lot of questions. I think first, like, so the power-ups all came, well, the power-up for Kaya came from the hair. And then the power-up for Reg came from the Prishka whistle. Right.
Yes.
And
yeah, and Bondrian explains that what a whistle does really is it kind of unlocks the true power of relics, and so that's what shows you that the stonework guy did his job, and that Prishka has really been turned into a true white whistle.
So my question is, who was everyone else's white whistles?
That is a good question. Yeah, because they do say that like.
There has to be a connection.
It's like a crystallized person.
Yeah,
it's like a person. We don't know. Yeah, I guess we. That's a really fascinating question.
Yeah, what's interesting is that.
Well, no, actually, I'm sorry. We do know Bondrian made his out of himself. We do know that he did explain that he used his original body to make that whistle.
Okay, so we know Bondrood's. But I think it was just interesting because we saw Prishka talk to Riko. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I don't know if it was Rico's mind making that up. You know what I mean? But to me, it was like, oh, wow, maybe we'll see Prishka more. Like, you know what I mean? Like just popping up in this kind of like celestial form. I don't even know how you describe it. But then I was like, I don't know, maybe it's just a one-time thing and her just, you know, imagining it. But I thought that was kind of cute. And I love Prishka, and yeah. I absolutely hate what happened to Prishka. Oh God,
it's like the only way to not be completely devastated by the ending of the movie is to, you know, to think that she still gets to like be with her friends in some form. You know, she's not completely 100% gone.
So she's alive though, or it's just like her spirit.
I think it's her spirit, but they've mentioned a couple times, like, I think she is to some degree, like, she is conscious. Like, she is, like, there is, like, a part of her that is still...
Dude, I hate Bondrood. Like, how could he turn... First of all, he turns children into, like, putty people. And then some of the children, if they're... you know, extraordinary in his opinion, got turned into cartridges, right? Like, I'm just like, the hell? I don't even got words. He's probably not dead too, which is like another part of this anime that I don't like. Like, at least give us the satisfaction after all of the sorrow that you put us through. At least like let him be offed. You know what I mean?
No.
But he needs to be offed in a terrible way. I'll be honest. Like, I thought that they were going to off him in the movie. And then I was like, this ain't good enough, like, for him. You know, like, I need this guy to suffer. And so, I mean, maybe they just, I mean, and he is a like, not a great villain in the sense that, like, I like him. But it's just, like, he's a very, one of the better villains I've seen. Because he's just, like, so awful. You know, you're just like, how could you be like this, you know?
Last week you were talking about how your great hope for the ending is that they're able to like destroy the abyss. So maybe in like that final destruction, we'll get like a nice shot of Bondrian getting smushed by something.
Yeah, you know what would actually be great is if like they seal off the abyss permanently and he's like somehow trapped in there and has to continuously go all the way down and up and down and up and just be like tortured for his life. And that's how the seal stays on. I don't know how that would work, but that would probably make me really happy and be somewhat of a fitting end. Honestly, just saying that out loud.
Justice.
Yeah, that just saying that out loud made me happy. So I'm like, I'm definitely not a good person either, but I'm just like, I just absolutely despise that character like so much. But Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about some other stuff though. I think let's go back to the beginning and not sure what's going on with Hanachi. Like, so I thought maybe you could talk about that a little, or not Nanachi. I said Hanachi, Nanachi. Because I was a little confused as to why Kaja or Kaya didn't want Riko to do anything. Like, I guess because we said like Kaja didn't want her to lose her value, you know what I mean? Like, because I guess she would have been stuck in this awful state. I guess I was just kind of confused by the whole thing and thought maybe you have a better sense.
Well, I think Nanachi, I think they've really sort of resigned themselves. I think they've regressed a bit. Like, they thought that they were over Midi, or that they thought they moved on, but having been confronted with this copy of Midi, they've realized that maybe they feel like they're not strong enough to move on, and they would rather just, you know, be there forever with Midi instead of having to deal with the pain of losing her again. And so I think for as much as Riko wants to save her friends, and Riko has been specific in saying that she wants to save Nanachi and Midi. So I think maybe Riko also thinks that this is
too big of
sacrificing. Well, I think Riko thinks that it might be worth sacrificing whatever she has to sacrifice, because not only would she be rescuing Nanachi, but she might be, you know, bringing back a friend that Nanachi has lost. But I think Kaya was basically trying to say that it would not be worth it, that, you know, you would be, and again, it's hard to know if Kaya is still looking at it from a very kind of value, you know, from a lost gain perspective of like, you are worth more than what is being offered here. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, Nanachi's still not in a good place, and we actually really don't get any resolution on that at all, right? Riko doesn't go back or anything.
I felt like they just walked out. Like, they were just like,
they did. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, well, they did get distracted by the huge jelly creature coming, right? Because they heard the commotion, right? And then they're like, we gotta go, right? Am I wrong? Did I make that up?
No, not at all. But I lied a little bit, because I guess what they did learn is that they talked to Wazukian.
Oh, the villagers can't leave. Yeah.
And Wazukian explains that he thinks probably the only thing of like value that they would be able to trade other than Riko's organs or whatever is Fapita. That they would have to basically take down Fapita, or that they would have to go up against Fapita. And that would be to Wazukian, like, the only possible alternative solution. And Wazukian says, like, well, that's impossible. There's no way you're ever going to do it. But of course, Riko doesn't believe in the word impossible. And so that's what leads them to kind of continue on that detour. And instead of going back to Bailoff and kind of haggling up over Rico's legs more, we start to learn more about, we're going to learn more about Fapita, the princess of the Hollows, because Voiko is going to finally spill the beans on the whole.
So Fapita, I didn't think Fapita was the villain. Like, so I'm surprised that they want Fapita to be brought down.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily about villainy. I think it's just about, like,
because Bailiff doesn't like Fapita. Like, it would be like something.
No, I
like
think that. I think it's more of the because they talk about here that Fapita is the embodiment of value. Like, that Fapita is like the value just personified, right? And so if there was anything that was going to potentially be used to like buy out Bailoff and to buy back Nanachi and Midi, it would be Fapita.
Yeah, but like, isn't that also messed up exchange? Like, giving a Fapita to Bailoff?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, this is not good. Not good. You know what she did say? She was like, what if I gave one eye? And I was like, that would actually not have been as bad. I mean, it's pretty terrible, but considering all the options, I was like, oh, one eye, yeah.
I feel so bad, because my first thought was that Riko is the last person on Earth that needs to be lacking in depth perception, because she is barely alive as it is.
I guess
she's constantly like she's already so constantly stumbling into completely life-threatening situations that lacking depth perception in the abyss would just be maybe the final straw.
Oh my gosh.
Tripping off the cliffs.
So for you, you're like, okay, actually, like maybe you should keep your eyes. Oh my god, too funny. Yeah, okay. So I guess we kind of explained what was going on with Nanachi. And we talked about Prushka. So the purple jello was, you said it was like a queen. I was kind of confused by like where this attack was coming from and like who that was.
It was like a colony of like worms that were congregated around a queen. And Rico figured out that like, because they had like a gas gland or something that, that's how Rico figured out that they were operating as like lighter than air, which meant that they could be manipulated in a certain way. And
interesting.
She's basically using her knowledge of the biology of the creatures of the abyss to her advantage, because unlike the villagers, she actually has knowledge of the world outside the village.
So
the villagers are fighting blind.
Why were they attacking the village?
Because they got lured in. That's like the ritual of the luring, is that the village intentionally lures these creatures in.
The worm specifically?
I mean, I think it can be any creature, really.
So when they lured this creature in, they were like, oh, this is too much for us to handle, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. I think they bit off more than they could chew. Because even, okay. What's his name? Jeroimo. The sage that replaced Voiko as the other three sages. This guy.
And
the nutsack looking guy.
I know. I was like, what is up with the animation here?
I know. But Jeroimo is like the toughest of the toughies. And I think even Kaio was like surprised that Jeroimo couldn't beat it, because it was like, oh, he's got a sword. Like this is...
This was kind of really fun action wise to watch, because we saw like two kaiju battles, essentially, like the shopkeeper, though, didn't last long. And then this one with Jironi, is that how you say it?
Jeroimo.
Sorry, I like can't read my handwriting right now, but yeah. This is a pretty cool fight. This is a pretty cool battle for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess, where do we think that the next episode is going to go? Because we see like this new Prushka whistle, and we see, you know, that Reg has like this enhanced ability now. I guess it's just kind of like, what do we think is next? And also, before we get into that, actually, can you talk to me about the three sages? Like, I'm like kind of confused. So we know that, I'm going to say his name wrong again, the one that starts with a J, and then we had Jeromo, and then we had the guy with the looks like a red and white yin yang face to me. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, Wazu Kyung.
Yeah. So like the three sages were a part of that group that we saw with the young girl, and before she turned and before her hair got all long and she was like chained up in some cavern, and then and Fapata, right? Like they were a part of that group, but we don't know who they are.
So we know because Wazu Kyan was, I mean, we know what we've seen so far. We know that Wazu Kyan was the leader of the name.
The expedition. They were called the suicide squad, the leader of the expedition. Something like that. Yeah. It started with a G. I should have written it down.
Yes. Wazu Kyan was the leader. Bailoff was kind of basically like the second in command, and Voiko, the our adorable long hair girl here, Voiko was the original third sage, but after whatever falling out happened that got her locked in the center of the village with all the goopy monsters, after that happened, then Jeroimo took her place.
Okay, so who's the third sage?
Him.
Those are two. Well, who's
Bailoff is the third one.
Oh.
Dragon. Yeah.
Oh. I didn't know Bailoff was... I thought Bailoff was just like a baddie, like on his own. Okay, so those are like the three most, I guess you would say like the highest hollows of the village, right?
Yeah, they were the ones in charge and they were
the most powerful, probably, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Okay. Okay, interesting. And they don't want and they can't recognize Vero.
They haven't seen Voico yet, actually. Voico's gone out of her way to avoid them because she knows that they would probably not be super happy.
Kaya
was there, but
yeah. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, Wazukyan was there, but it doesn't seem like he noticed Voico. Voico's kind of hiding out. And Kaya doesn't know who Voico is at all. It doesn't seem. Doesn't seem like Kaya recognizes her.
Okay. What in the hell is that creature in the bottom left corner?
You know, just another one of the hollows. It's fine.
What is wrong with the creator of this? Like, sometimes I'm just like, I don't know. It makes me low-key not want to watch, but I'm this far now, so I got to stick with it. So, okay.
Fallacy.
Yeah. Another interesting point was, so we now know that Reg, well, I don't know if it's for sure, but it seems like Reg is a resident of the Golden City, right? And like, this is the, what we've been hearing about, like, so much. Like, this is where we think that Rico's mom could be, right?
Well, at the very least, it's hinting more at wherever Reg actually came from, because I know it was last week, was when Reg got more information about how, you know, he's just one of many different kind of interface units that have been built to sort of explore and interact with things throughout the different layers. Mm-hmm. But he just happens to be special, we discover, because he can go between layers. And so we're slowly learning more and more about like the origins of these artificial kind of these relic beings. Mm-hmm. And it does seem like the Golden City seems to be maybe the origin point or an origin point, or at least a place where they can go for more answers.
Okay. So I definitely thought that was like something that kind of stuck out to me. Also, Arumi. I don't remember. They said something about that at the end. Yeah, what is that?
Oh, Irumui?
Yeah, what is that?
I
was like...
So I will say I actually do know what that is now, but it would be kind of a spoiler manga for next week's episode. I a little bit, yeah. Yeah. I was comparing some things across the episodes, and I got to this part and I was like, oh, I kind of want to know. So I did read ahead just a teeny tiny little bit, just to kind of get an idea of what was coming next week. But I do know what that refers to. And
okay, well, don't say anything. I guess it's secret. Well, yeah, I thought that this was a really interesting episode. I really like the action with the whole jelly queen worm thingy-majigs. I think like we kind of haven't had a lot of action. You know, we've had like a lot of heavy developments and like really. Mm-hmm. Really like shitty things happening and scary things happening, but that was like kind of like, oh cool, like some action, you know. And I think that a lot of questions, you know, like I'm just like, what is this thing, what, like, how are they going to potentially bring down Fapita? Like, is that really a great way to exchange? I really want to find out more about that whole expedition. And I think it was kind of interesting because I'm saying her name wrong, the girl with the V name, how do you say it?
Voico.
I kind of was like, she was like, well, let me tell my story, right? And so I was like, oh wow. So I think we're gonna hear more about the expedition and like how everyone kind of like fell into their places there, right? So yeah,
how did Bailoff become a giant dragon mask thing? That's so quite I a wonder blow-up.
Who is the red and white yin yang face guy?
That's Wazukyan. That's the the leader guy.
The captain with the blue hair.
Yeah.
Then who's the big guy with the nutsack face?
I honestly don't know. I don't know if we've met him.
Interesting. Lots of questions. Lots of questions about this world. And the shopkeeper's dead, huh?
I mean, I think, well, it's still kind of unclear how death works.
I know. It seems like seems like they die, but then they can kind of come back, right?
Yeah. I mean, because like Ma, it really seemed like Ma was gonna like die here. Like die. But
dude, Ma should have died when the first balancing happened. Like, I was like, there's no way we're seeing that character again. Then we see Ma walking around with the dog arm. We won't say what Lindsay refers to it as. And then here, and I was just like, I'm like you said, we're a little confused on how death happens here, but Mama's still around. I don't know how you feel about that.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm all right with Mom. Ma's all right with me. Ma's growing on you. Yeah, like I mean, is the ass kind of unpleasant to look at? Yes. Do I love the obsession with Manya's butthole? No, I don't. But it really does seem like that Ma's heart is in the right place. This is like second time
you could hear what you just said. And then you go, but it seems like Ma's heart is in the right place.
Ma was getting ready to sacrifice themselves for Rico, and that's like the second time that they put themselves in harm's way for Rico. So I feel like
Ma's redeemed themselves.
You got to stop squeezing Manya so hard, for sure. That's like. I hope Ma's learned that lesson.
Look, Ma's protecting Manya now. So I'm like, you're right. Ma's had quite the redemption arc, to say the least. But anyway, I think that we're good, though. I think we covered everything. Is there anything else you want to say? Your final thoughts on the episode?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I liked the uptick in action. I like the uptick just in kind of hopefulness. This is one of the first episodes in a long time that felt like a real adventure. And it didn't end with anyone getting turned into a cartridge or, having their whole sense of self broken and shattered apart or anything like that. So that was nice. Yeah.
Dude, look at the guy in the bottom, like, right corner. What is wrong with this guy? Wait, which
one?
The dark, like, with the, like, slit eyes. I mean, what does that look like?
Oh, sure. Oh, I mean, we all know what that looks like. But, you know, that little bear is pretty cute, and that's only kind of phallic. That little pink bear is only a little phallic.
It's ridiculous that in this show we have to be like, well, that one's only a little phallic. Like, I'm just like, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Does Moogie look like genitals? I can't remember. Oh yeah, no, I guess Moogie does kind of look like genitals. Just maybe a little more hidden, but
Yeah. Anyway, on that fine note, thank you everyone for watching Anime News Network's The ANN After Show. James, you were awesome per usual. And I know everyone's been missing Lindsay. Don't worry, she will be back. We missed her too. But thanks for joining everybody. And we'll see you next time.
Bye. Bye-bye.
See ya.